Upchili da, nige 16 mok 5th episode, uchit upchila si migmagi, ula bilingual, migma adla si yoi podcast, at ni delusi anikle. Welcome to the 5th episode of Upchila si migmagi, a bilingual, migma and English podcast. I am your host, Annie Claire. Coming up on the 5th episode, you will hear from 3 mothers of murdered and missing Aboriginal women and men. Normally on this show, I strive to provide you with content in the Mi'kmaq language, but the topic is of such importance that, in the hopes of reaching a wider audience, today's show is in English. Nigegiskuk manudumo nolnuiktuk aganuttes adlasiyawiktuk nigenudumoka mimajuinuk weskudimidish negmok uchit unjanwatan delsiktobnik edabalkik mimajuinuk nuduman adlasiyawiktuk. As the federal government prepares for the National Inquiry in 2016, it is my hope that the family members continue to come forward to bravely speak about their losses and that this issue is taken seriously.
Nuda atamok jalan lagumun no. Atladiganda nuda atladigad no.
Miriam Saunders is an Innu living in Happy Valley, Goose Bay, Labrador. She is the mother of Loretta Saunders. Loretta went missing on February 14, 2013. She was working on her thesis on murdered and missing Aboriginal women at St. Mary's University in Halifax. Her body was found 12 days later near the highway in New Brunswick. 2 people pleaded guilty to her murder in April of 2015. I spoke with Miriam earlier in 2014. She began by telling me about her daughter.
She was a very petite little girl. I always used to be daddy's and mommy's girl. And she enjoyed swimming, skating, things like that. And she was a very well-behaved little girl, like, you know.
How many siblings does she have?
Yeah, she got 5 brothers and 2 sisters. She's about the middle one. All my kids are really close together. But she and Delilah were really close because they lived together, right?
Yes.
She got along with everybody, happy, and she did anything for anybody. And she was a real smart girl. She did upgrading for 8 months. She finished 3 of the programs, which they would took 3 years. She'd done it in 8 months. And then she went to university, and she was doing good. She was an honor student, getting A's. She was a good inspiration, even in when she done upgrading down Hopedale. A lot of girls, like a lot of kids, end up studying more and having more passion for their upgrading. When she inspired a lot of young kids down to Hopedale.
Yes.
And she was really smart. She was studying all the time, always studying. Every time you talk to her, I gotta go now, Mom, I gotta study. And like, she really worked really hard to get to where she was, get her life. Like, she was doing perfect.
Yeah.
She studied hard, and she was really dedicated to. She'd be calling me about her thesis, and she was going to do on missing women or on prejudice against Native. And she picked, I told her that'd be a good one on missing women, and that we talked about it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She was really dedicated to it, and I even thought when she went missing that that was only part of her story. I thought we was go find her. Yeah.
Did you come down to Halifax for her graduation?
Yes. Yes. I picked up her degree. I picked up her degree, me and her father. First I was sad. Mixed feelings. I was crying first going. And then after a while, I went out, talked to her, and talked to God a little. I got calm, went in, and went up, me and her father, and when they give me her degree, I put her father's hand on it, and we put it up to the air to heaven, as far as we could to her. kids, and they had a standing ovation. I felt so proud of her.
When you first found out that your daughter went missing, who told you guys?
I phoned. I was phoning around for her, trying to get a hold of her. I'm the one reported her missing.
When you first found out that she was actually missing, how were you feeling?
Scared. Worried. Wondering what was, like, wondering what happened to her when she went missing. Like, we didn't go out. We just waited home, right?
Well, you didn't come down. You wanted to stay at home.
Yeah.
Because it was too hard.
Yeah, plus the police said that they were getting closer and it'd be better for me to stay put. Better to stay home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking, wondering who had her and what they were, if whoever had her, what they were doing to her. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I was by the phone day and night. Yeah, waiting to hear from her. Keep phoning her phone.
What about her dad? How is her dad feeling?
He's pain and blood. He's hurt. And when my daughter was murdered, she was pregnant.
When did she find out that she was pregnant?
In January. She called in January, let us know she was having a baby. She was right excited. We was right excited.
Only.
And that baby was going to be a human that we were making plans for. And that the baby that she was carrying is now recognized. It should be recognized that was another life, right?
Yeah.
But it's not recognized. My grandchild isn't recognized as a human in my daughter's body.
Yeah.
When he or she is, we had plans to take care of it, right?
Her being pregnant, how did that make you feel when you found out that she was pregnant?
We was right excited. We was right excited going to have little Princey. They used to say, oh, she has another little Princey. And she was going quick. She was going to take 1 year off school, and that when the baby was a year old, she was going to go to school. She asked me to quit my job and go take care of baby with her. And I was going to. I was going to quit my job and go take care of her baby while she finished law school. When they first had her down, white woman missing, I was really happy. Then they changed it, got lower. Finally, they had her native woman.
Yeah.
Because I was right worried. When she was white, they looked harder and they talked more to me. After that, they never called me once. I had to call them to see what was going on with my daughter's case.
So you think they treated it a lot better because she was white, or?
Yeah, that's the way I feel. I would have found, well, if she was, they wouldn't have been so insistent and persistent on everything. That's the way I feel now, personally. That, not saying, I was just scared that's how it would have been.
You're listening to an interview with Miriam Saunders, mother of Loretta Saunders.
Pam Filier is a Mi'kmaq from Iskanobinish First Nation, also known as Burnt Church. She is the mother of Hilary Brunel, who went missing while visiting friends on September 5, 2009. Hilary was 16 years old. Her body was found 2 months after she disappeared. Curtis Brunel, her older cousin, was charged with her rape and murder. We spoke in June 2014. Pam began by telling me about the night she last heard from Hilary.
She had called me the morning that she was murdered. She called me at 3 in the morning. And I could tell, you know, most teenagers at that age, they're all getting into a little bit of booze. And I could tell, you know. And I said, Hillary, I said, you go home. Go over to Auntie Sherry's. I asked her if she was okay. She said, yeah, I'm all right. Like, she was just joining a bunch of other teenagers. Because I could hear the kids in the background there. We ended our conversation. I said, I love you. She said, I love you too. And we hung up. And I never heard from her again. I was living in Miramichi at the time, man. So when I came down to Burn Church to look for her, I knew something was wrong that same. I just knew it. And you know something? That day that he killed her, I never went for a drive in Tavison Tack in so many years, I couldn't even tell you how long ago it was that I went driving around in the woods of Tavison Tack. Just something that day, I wanted to go, and I kept telling Fred, come on, let's go for a drive to Tabu. Not even knowing the reason I was being pulled there was because he murdered my little girl, and that's where she was put. So I called the cops, and they took my statement, and they said they'd get back to me. Nobody got back to me. Nobody. So then I called the police department, and I would ask, is there any news on, like, you know, what have you guys been doing to find Hillary? That officer would say, oh, no, this guy is handling it. You got to talk to him. Then when I talked to him, he saw this guy is handling it. It was like they were playing hot potato. Finally, I got sick of it, and I'm not a stupid woman. I called the media right away because I know if I call the media, it's going to humiliate them and it's going to force them to do their job instead of just thinking she's just another Indian girl out getting drunk, partying, and didn't go home. For me, that's how I took it. So then when the media got involved, that's when the police really had to start looking. Like, you know, and then it just kept getting bigger and bigger, like so many, you know, police officers and people, everybody looking. When we were looking for her, you know, Curtis would even be there when they all went to, I think it was Portage River. He was even there pretending to look for Hillary. The last place she was at was at Spencer Joe's. He told her she had to leave because he was going to the powwow. The police told me this is their scenario. They said, we believe that when Hillary left Spencer's and began walking, she comes to that first house. Well, Curtis was standing on that porch with a couple of guys. The police officer thinks that Curtis and the boys he was with were doing catcalls on her. She goes to the 4D store. You even see her when she's going down the hall. She's walking fast. When she's coming out, like, she's just looking around as if checking to see if someone was following her. So when she left there, just a couple minutes after, Curtis was in there, probably looking for her. So he went driving down to Burn Church, passed by Hillary on the Burn Church Road going down, 4D's Road. He ended up going back, and Hillary's at the turn before the bridge, the Green Bridge. And he said he picked her up over there. And from there, he took her to his place, and he beat her up and raped her. He put his hand over her mouth. He said to stop her from screaming. He killed her like that.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And he just would twist the story all over. He had like 3 different stories, and it's like, oh, my God. Just constant lie after lie after lie. Curtis raped and murdered my little girl. In court, he was looking at pictures of Hillary, and it's her dead body he's looking at pictures of. Such a friggin' monster. Puts his head up, and he's still able to smile and talk. And I was so disgusted. I said, look at him, looking at pictures of my little girl's dead body and putting his head up and smiling. That's a monster. And it made me cry, of course. Like, you know, treating my kid like that was a dog they just ran over on the road.
Through all the ordeal that you've went through since your daughter went missing in 2009, how were you feeling?
Well, the doctor told me because of the stress of it all that I became a severe diabetic. Almost had a heart attack a few times. I was in intensive care probably 3 times. My organs were shutting down. Another time, like, I was on the verge of a heart attack. Another time, I couldn't stop vomiting. Like, I don't even sleep in a bed anymore. I sit up on my couch every night. Every night I sit on my couch as if I'm waiting for her to come home. I haven't laid down in a bed in my home since she died. I don't know why I can't. I just sit up every night. And then I see the sun coming up and I realize that, again, I didn't lay down all night.
Was Hillary your only daughter?
She was my only child for the longest time. I have a 9-year-old now.
And how was Hillary when she was a young child?
Oh, she was a healthy girl. She was so funny. And my son, just like her. She loved to sing, dance, loved her friends. And then all this crap happened. But how the hell do you move on from losing your daughter in the most tragic way that a woman can die? He took her to his house, beat her and raped her, put her in his truck, took her to where his father's building is in Tabasintac, right before you go right into the reserve. And Curtis said he took her out of the truck and he put her in the woods. Twisted so many stories around, tried to make her look so bad. I mean, shit, she was just a little girl. It's as if they wanted to blame her.
How long did the search take?
She went missing September 5th. And she was found November 10 or 11. I think 11 on Remembrance Day. But they only told me on the 13th. That's my husband's son's birthday, and he was so close to Hillary. Now every year on his birthday, he has that anniversary of my sister was found. On my birthday. It devastated our family. Completely devastated. You know, when I was 16, I almost died the same way. And I never said anything.
What would be the message that you would want to put out there for other mothers?
They need to look at their kids and don't think that it can't happen to to you. Because I never thought it would happen to me. I really didn't. I'd see mothers on TV pleading for people to help find their kid. And I'd feel so bad for her. Now I am her.
You are listening to an interview with Pam Filier, the mother of Hilary Bonnell. Mandy Metallic is a Mi'kmaq from Vestigous First Nation in Quebec. She is the mother of Chris Metallic. He was studying at Mount Allison University in Sackville, New Brunswick. Chris was last seen leaving a party in 2012. His whereabouts are still unknown. Mandy began by telling me about when she found out Chris was missing.
It was November 25th, 2012, when my other son, who was attending Mount Allison University, called me up and said that Chris never came home from a party the night before. It was around 8:30 that evening, Sunday evening, he called and said that Chris is missing, and he said that all his friends were looking for him all day. He left his cell phone at the party, his shoes, his glasses, and everyone thought he was going home, but for some reason ended up walking the opposite way.
Can you tell me a little bit about your son?
Well, he was quiet. He never got in trouble with the law. He had a lot of friends. He loved his sports, especially basketball. They're always winning championships. And he worked with children at youth center over here. Had a lot going for him, and he had, you know, his own hopes and dreams. And
what was he taking?
Anthropology. It was in his third year. He's gotten so many awards. Everybody had something good to say about him. He had so many friends. Everybody, a lot of people looked up to him. I don't understand why. What happened? We all had good relationships. All I feel now is that maybe he was upset that night and went for a walk. I don't know. I don't know what was going through his mind that night. He was very intoxicated. They were mixing drinks all night. Yeah, he was like, I have his passwords for everything. I have his cell phone. I read all his messages, emails, Facebook, Twitter. I read everything. There's no indication of him running away or being that troubled. All I know is that he was having a hard time. He had dropped two classes a couple weeks before this. I went in Sackville Sunday night after I got the phone call. I went to go report him missing at the police station Monday morning. They told me that they received a phone call at 5:30 in the morning saying that there was a suspicious person walking into the woods carrying bolt cutters that matched the description that I gave them. When they contacted the witness, he said, yeah, that's who he saw. And he wasn't sure if there were bolt cutters. Figured they were driveway markers, reflective driveway markers. He was one in each hand. He was just walking. He was just walking at a good pace. Didn't look cold, all by himself. And so they went out and started searching these trails, and they found flip-flops. And then one was in the mud. They pulled it out, and then they followed. There was more footprints going in the mud all the way through the road on Ward Siding, and then some footprints went up White Birch Road, and they went down White Birch Road and back and forth and into the cornfield towards the river. And that's as far as they assumed he fell in the water. But they blocked it off. They drained it. The divers searched it. They couldn't find anything. And I don't think he landed in the water or went near it because he was afraid of water. He didn't know how to swim. And that water is not deep anyway. He could have stood up in there. I'm feeling that he kept walking. He followed the river, going deeper and deeper into the woods. and somehow made it back out onto the road and went back the other way where he was last seen. Or he kept going deeper and deeper in the woods. And we've searched. I can't even show a map on the computer screen of the whole area we searched because it's huge. I'd have, we have maps printed out that cover my wall, and we've gone as far as 20 kilometers out in the woods, this way, that way, every way, except where we are right now. And so what if he, you know, the only place we're not searching is where he was last seen, because he's walking away from there. But what if somehow he made it back? So that's where we are now. And one police officer tells us that he thinks he fell in the river and got washed out to the bay. And another officer says, I asked him, you know, not as a, don't tell me as a cop or an investigator, what do you think, where do you think he is? And he says, I think he's still in the woods. So that's where we're keep on searching. We're not just going to assume he fell in the water and give up.
Yeah.
It's not an option for us.
So people in Sackville still go out with you?
First year and a half, maybe we have had a lot of help. Now it's, there's just like four or five of us. There's not many of us anymore. We're not stopping. We're not stopping until we search everywhere. And even if there's some days we don't know where to go anymore, we find a place to go keep looking. And if we have to go over the areas again, we do it. There's so much going through my mind that it's just kind of hard to talk about without starting to cry. So devastated, angry, tired. Some days are really bad, where everyone's frustrated. Always, you know, I'm going through daily torture of not knowing where he went, what happened to him, where he is right now,
yeah.
If we're ever going to find him. I still have hope, but it doesn't look good. It never ends, and it doesn't get any easier. I've lost track of how much this has cost us. I've lost count after 30,000. I hate that we have no more privacy anymore. Our lives are an open book right now. Everyone's watching us. We were all happy before all this. Sometimes I think this is going to tear us all apart, but we're all sticking together. I do get some ignorant people online or that call me up during the night, psychics. A lot of people tell me some horrific stories. There's a video on YouTube. It's just called Chris Metallic. And it's a lot of pictures I put on there with a song. I've had some mean comments on there, like, oh, he's an Indian, who cares? You know, like, I've put up with a lot of mean people that I don't know what they get out of tormenting me. So I'm paranoid a lot of times when someone calls me up and says, oh, well, but when they hear rumors, I heard this, I heard this, and I heard that maybe he's with this one or he ran away. Or I didn't even put him on the government website for missing people yet. Only the police can authorize that, and they're waiting for me to give the okay, and I'm just not ready yet. I don't want him to be part of all these missing people. I don't want to be a statistic. Like, I just want to find them, and I don't know how to move on after this, and I'm scared and we're never going to find them.
You're listening to an interview with Mandy Metallic, mother of Chris Metallic.
That's our show, and thank you for listening to these important stories. For more episodes of the podcast, go to abjalasimigmagi.wordpress.com. That's PJILASIMIKMAKI. .wordpress.com. Walaling up namutas.
Walalio dandal sixinama ula podcast daljomudurio uldadoxum website um delusik upjalasi migmagi. Up namutosum.